Welcome! You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is a syndicated show produced in the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us. On today's show, we speak to William Endel. He is an American-German economist, a journalist, and the author of several books, including his latest, Full Spectrum Dominance, The Key Role of the U.S.-NATO War Agenda, The Connection to the Economic Crisis, and What Can We Do About It? On the second part of our show, we speak to Eduardo Galeano, author of many books, including Open Veins of Latin America and his very latest book, Mirrors, An Almost Universal History. I am very privileged to have as our guest today William Endel. He is an amazing writer and is here to speak to us about his latest book, Full Spectrum Dominance. Welcome to our show, William.
Thank you for having me.
When we look at the world, there seems to be chaos everywhere we look. We see drones bombing people in Pakistan. We know that the Palestinian people, more than 90% of their territory has now been taken by Israel. And we're left with this idea that war is a natural thing, that these things just sort of happen. How do you explain this? Is there a structure behind it?
Well, I think the best way is just to go back to the collapse of the Soviet Union in the early 90s. And at that point, the whole reason for having a NATO, to have a military budget of $1 trillion a year from the member countries of NATO, especially the United States, and so the reason for that collapsed with it. And the question is really today, why almost 20 years after that, why we not only have a NATO still, but NATO is being extended to Afghanistan, it's been extended to the Balkans, it's been extended virtually down to Africa and covering the entire planet. So I think the wars you mentioned have very much to do with the idea of what the Pentagon calls full spectrum dominance, the title of my new book. The idea is the U.S. military power projection intends to dominate everything on this planet from the standpoint of the oceans with the Navy, the air with the Air Force, the land with the Army, and also space, outer space, cyberspace. And that really is an agenda that makes me, for one, very uncomfortable, and I think it makes most Americans uncomfortable if they understood it.
People think that, well, wouldn't it be better if we have a country like the United States as the world policeman? Other than what are the alternatives? Anytime you talk about an alternative to the capitalist system, people say, well, you want to live in a fascist system? So what does this really entail, this full spectrum dominance that you describe?
Go back, actually, before World War II in 1939, and there was a project, which I talk about in the book, called the War and Peace Studies, and it was a project done by a private think tank out of New York, financed by the largest international banks, called the Council on Foreign Relations. And the War and Peace Studies, literally, they brought together some of the top experts in America to plan not how to deal with the possibility of war in Europe, but they dealt with the project of how to dominate the world after the end of the next coming war that they anticipated, and the collapse of the British Empire. In other words, America would fill the vacuum being left by the collapse of the British Empire and the collapse of Hitler Germany, which was the German Empire. The power projection of the United States, as these elites saw it, was based on two foundations. One was the fact that the United States would dominate the world financial system with the dollar, the same as the British had done for 150 years before, and through the City of London finance. And not only would the U.S. dominate the world financial system and therefore be able to control economic allies or opponents, but it would also keep that domination on the financial and economic side through having the strongest military power on the face of the earth. And during the Cold War, the Soviet Union played, this may shock some of your listeners, but the Soviet Union played a very useful role for these East Coast elites of the Council on Foreign Relations, because it created this enemy image, this boogeyman that could always be used to justify taxpayer dollars being spent for new weapon systems. So the U.S. military projection and the U.S. control of the dollar as the key currency in world finance have been the two pillars of power. Now we see, since the collapse of the subprime financial sector a year and a half ago, or 2 years ago actually, last summer, we see that the only pillar left for this elite is the military power projection, and that's one that's looking increasingly shaky. So we're in a very, very terminal, decisive phase in terms of American power projection. Now, the idea of, is it better to have the U.S. as the World Cup? Frankly, I think the track record suggests otherwise. Why do we need a World Cup? I don't think the world is ready for a World Cup. That implies one world government. That implies de facto a totalitarian system. So, and that's the subtitle of my book, Full Spectrum Dominance, Totalitarian Democracy in the New World Order. And it's a very deliberately chosen title because under the rubric of democracy, these U.S. elite, the major banks that are being bailed out with taxpayer dollars for the criminal misconduct they carried on over the last 7-8 years with the not only the subprime but the securitization of almost everything that moves, these same banks behind the major strategy that defines what U.S. policy is. And that strategy is not one that has anything to do with what most people think of in the word democracy or even Republican representative government. It has to do with concentrations of power unlike anything we've seen on the face of the earth. Look who's come out of the subprime crisis smelling sweet as a rose. Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, Bank of America. The big have become bigger, and the middle size and the small banks have simply been chewed up or destroyed. This is really a very ominous trend, and I don't think the record of the U.S. In Iraq and the record of the U.S. under the present administration in Afghanistan suggests that the country has lost the moral right to be anyone's cop at this point.
Let's focus on the economic point for a moment, because you mentioned there's the two sides, the economic and the military. While the U.S. is facing the worst economic crisis ever, we're seeing President Obama handing over trillions of dollars to the banking sector. How does this contribute to that spectrum of dominance? You know, how does this idea of crisis and creation of crisis, you know, contribute to this cycle of aggression against the majority of the population?
I think the people who created this securitization revolution in finance, as Alan Greenspan used to call it, I think they miscalculated in terms of their timing, and the thing simply got out of control and started a domino-style collapse before they were ready for. Usually they create crises, like in the 1920s, like in 1907, like in 1893. The inside elite bankers create crises in order to consolidate power. In this case, I don't think it worked the way they had planned on it. And therefore, that has a direct impact on full-spectrum dominance, simply because the U.S. is going to be stretched to the breaking point, is already, in terms of financing multi-front wars in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Africa, in Central Asia. And so the imperium that the elites of the Council on Foreign Relations and certain powerful banking and oil interests and military industry created after 1945, using the U.S. as their base, that system, that Bretton Woods dollar system, has collapsed, or it's in its collapse process. And it's like Humpty Dumpty, all the king's horses and all the king's men can't put Humpty Dumpty dollar together again. No matter how much taxpayer money you throw at AIG or throw at Goldman Sachs or Citigroup or whatever. And that is simply because they have made a policy decision to hollow out the industrial economy of the United States, the heart of their system, over the last 30 years. The United States no longer makes things like we used to when I was growing up. And we've outsourced that to Asia, to Latin America, to Eastern Europe, to Lord knows where. We've become a what's called a service economy, but really when a crisis like this hits, a service economy is ill-equipped to feed and house and clothe its citizens, and that's really where we are right now. So the debt structures that have been built up by these banking powers over the last 25 years or so have gotten to the point where it's just out of control. It's the dollar system is caught in a classic debt crisis like countries of Africa or Latin America were during the 1980s.
When you're talking about the collapse, are we talking about a total collapse of the economic system in the U.S.? And what does this mean for capitalism? Does that mean we're coming to an end? Are we transitioning to something else?
I don't quite see it in such broad terms. I think we're coming to the end of a U.S.-dominated one-player-calls-it-all system. That is the dollar domination, the city of New York, Wall Street finance, and the dollar being the decisive force that everybody has to click their heels and salute to. That has been the case for the last 55, 60 years. It no longer is the case. European banks, after 2007, when the crisis first broke, they realized that they had been defrauded by their American bank counterparties. Some of the, you know, the bluest of the blue chip U.S. banks had lied and sold them garbage, toxic waste, and gave them AAA ratings through Moody's and the U.S. rating agencies. And they realized the whole thing was a scam, designed to spread the risk and spread the toxic waste throughout the world banking system, and make huge profits in the process for the U.S. banks. So there is no trust in American banks at this point in Europe. There is no trust in American banks at this point in the Middle East oil countries. There is no trust in American banks at this point in China and the Asian economies. The question is how they act on that. But the era when everybody would blindly say, well, the dollar is a safe haven, that is over. And I think we're going to see a very rocky, rough period, certainly for the United States, unfortunately, tragically, because this didn't need to happen. The next 10 years, approximately, are going to be pure economic hell for most Americans, unless people really decide to wake up and realize that they are the government and not these corrupt and bought and paid for so-called congressmen that you have making the laws on behalf of Wall Street.
I would argue from a Latin American perspective that we've been in crisis for a long time. If you look at Latin America, the collapse of the Argentinian economy, the mass murderous governments of military dictatorships in Central America, in Canada and the U.S. and the developed countries, if you want to call it that, there are other aspects of aggression, and that is there's major rollbacks of benefits and cuts. So crises seem to be very useful in that. Is this just ideological fervor, or is this deliberate? Because it seems the power levers have long been, or at least we've been led to believe, it's not in the hands of the workers.
Well, that's been a deliberate process. It started in the 1970s when one of the Rockefeller brothers, John D. Rockefeller, the one who's so big on population reduction, he wrote a book called The Second American Revolution. In that book, he called for literally deregulating and privatizing services that the government was now carrying out on behalf of the public, and essentially rolling back all of these concessions that were given to the broad population, to working people and the middle classes during the Great Depression. At that point, they had their back to the wall, and the Wall Street banks were under huge pressure. I mean, people were fighting mad. The amazing thing this go-around is that there's been so little directed anger. People have more anger at a piddly few million dollars bonuses for someone at AIG or one of the Wall Street banks than they do over the fact that their pockets are being gouged for $2 trillion to bail out these brain-dead banks. But once it clicks what the scam is, and the fact that Obama is nothing more than America's Gorbachev, if you want to call it that, he was put in there by these banking elites and by the military industry simply to put a new face on the same policy. And I think more and more people are beginning to realize that, in certain cases, the policies that Obama Obama's people are advocating are even more extreme than anything Bush or Cheney ever dared to do. The elites control both political parties in the United States. That should come as a shock to nobody, because the stakes of controlling American policy are far too big for them. So Wall Street and the military industry and big oil make sure they give generously to both political parties, and that whoever wins the election is beholden to them and not to the voters. They've broken trade unions, beginning with Reagan. They busted the Air Traffic Controllers Union as a signal to all of organized labor, and the percentage of organized labor went from almost 30% back in the 80s, early 80s, down to less than, 12% or so today. And that tells a lot, but there's no reason that can't be reversed. And that's what these elites are terrified of. There's a group of them called the Good Club. They have a sense of humor, I guess. They met in at the home of the president of the Rockefeller University, and George Soros was there. David Rockefeller helped organize it together with Warren Buffett. Every one of them were billionaires, including Oprah Winfrey, according to reports. And the main item on their agenda was, how do we reduce the world's population? That was their biggest worry. How do we, one way or another, de facto, what it amounts to is, how do we eliminate hundreds of millions or several billion people over the next decades so that we can keep our control? That's their agenda, quite simply. And once people realize it's not about democracy, or it's not about helping normal people, it's about using people and throwing them away when they're no longer useful. You know, there are almost 6 billion of normal people in the world, and maybe 500,000 to 1 or 2 million at most of these ultra-elites that are out to control everything, and that the numbers simply speak in favor of sanity.
It was interesting how, in the midst of the economic crisis, suddenly we have the World Health Organization declaring a pandemic of the swine flu that seems to be the nearest threat. And for someone who is perhaps a little skeptical already of governments intent on dividing the population, what a better way to divide the population than to make everybody afraid to even be in contact with one another. And pandemics seem to have the role of being able to impose quarantines. People, you know, can congregate.
Sure. I think there's a very direct relation. I think you're hitting on an absolutely crucial point. And the timing of this so-called swine flu is absolutely no accident. What we're talking about here is a phenomenon that's about as dangerous as the common cold. So let's forget all this panic and fear-mongering. The other thing is, the whole purpose of this CDC and WHO panic-mongering, and they have never once, and you can go on their website and check this out, what I'm saying, they have never once demonstrated, number one, the existence of a virus in isolation with an electron microscope and the chemical characteristics listed, called H1N1 influenza A. They claim they have isolated, but they've never proven it in a peer-reviewed scientific journal. And not only that, but the vaccines that are purportedly being rolled out, these vaccines have not been tested, and they're recommending that pregnant mothers and young children and the military and all health personnel be the number one priority to get stuck with these vaccines. And the point about the vaccines is, the Obama administration has lifted liability for the pharmaceutical vaccine makers, so they don't even have liability like they did last time we had this swine flu scare that proved out to be a false panic back in 1976, when President Ford ordered mass inoculation or vaccination, and people started coming down with the Guillain-Barre syndrome, which is a form of paralysis that can fatally kill you if it goes to the lungs, and it was directly related to the vaccination. That's going to be the case again. The point is, the adjuvants that are put into every vaccine, but certainly in a mass vaccination like this swine flu vaccine, these are the things that kill and maim and cripple people for life. And now, without any liability, these drug companies stand to make billions of profits, and they simply are laughing all the way to the banks as poor, innocent, gullible citizens around the world and across America line up to get jabbed for something that's totally unnecessary. I just wrote two articles in a series with the title, and it's a brutal title, but it's called It's the Vaccine, Stupid. The point is, It's a panic designed to get people to take these vaccines, which are going to kill, cripple, and maim them. And if you're killed, crippled, or maimed, or your nearest relatives are, you're going to not be in such a fighting mood to change the government or to change the Congress and get some people in there that are going to do the right thing for the country. So I think there is a connection in that sense.
It's interesting how you point out that we seem to have this blind faith in these institutions, especially the drug companies that are so powerful. In Canada, we have a single-payer system, but a lot of the problems with our healthcare system is that many of the drug companies are completely extorting us. But I want to bring you to another point, and that is, what then is the role of the World Health Organization? Because it seems to have ignored a real pandemic, and that is the issue of hunger and poverty, where millions of people, 35 million people, died each year of hunger. What exactly is the role of this organization then?
My only conclusion after looking at this in great detail over the past several years, I wrote a book called Seeds of Destruction, The Hidden Agenda Behind Genetic Manipulation. In there, I document not only industrialization of the world food supply, but the use of organizations like WHO to enforced policies that are absolutely counterproductive to human health and safety. If you look at the medical advisory board of WHO, you find people on that board in a prominent position who are literally taking money from the drug companies that are promoting these vaccines for H1N1, avian flu, and other things. So there's rampant conflict of interest in this. Nobody in the major media is turning the spotlight on this. They're all just marching like little lambs behind the WHO, and not giving the kind of scrutiny that a ruthless independent media should be giving.
What can people do? How do we get out of this cycle? Where do people start who have been misinformed all these years?
Talk with your friends, your closest neighbors who share the same concerns about the future of their children and their grandchildren that you do, and begin to wake up. It's very simple. Once people get it, it's not all that complicated. You have a power clique that's out to preserve their power at the cost of the rest of the population, and they don't, to be blunt about it, they don't give a damn about human life when it stands in the way of their power. And now their power is threatened like it never has been before, and they're doing desperate things to keep that. You know, the interesting thing is none of it is really clicking the way it might have 10 or 15 or 20 years ago, because we've been hit so many times with so many fake scenarios and frauds that people began to get a gut feeling, this government is lying to me. So I think people are much more awake now than they were even 5, 6, 7 years ago. So understand what the world is, what the waters are that we're swimming in, so we can look out for the sharks. And then we can find ways of socially coming together in more natural structures that solve that. The human creativity is infinite in terms of solving problems once they know what the real problem is. That's, I think, the first step.
Thank you. My guest is William Endel. William Endel is an American-German freelance journalist, historian, and economic researcher. His books include Power of Money, Rise and Decline of the American Century, also Full Spectrum Dominance, Totalitarian Democracy in the New World Order, which is his latest book, Seeds of Destruction, and A Century of War, Anglo-American Oil Politics and the New World Order. How can people access your books?
The best way is Amazon. Google my last name, ENG. DAHL, and it should come up.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Good. Thank you for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care.
This one goes out to you and yours. Family.
Don't tell the DJ got to turn it low. We keep on rocking to the early morning. I say, hey, no, no. Come on. I say, hey, no, no. Don't tell the people that they gotta go. I wanna keep them to the early morning. I say, hey, no, no. I say, hey, no, no.
Yeah, head in the area.
You've been a soldier, girl, and I would do anything for you. It's true, it's true.
Come on.
I wanna be there in the early morning. I'm gonna light up the night for you.
Light us.
It's true, it's true.
Right.
Don't tell the DJ got the time.
me, but then they gotta go. I wanna keep them till the early morning. I say, eh, hey, no, no. I say, eh, hey, no, no, yeah. My
name's Rump, Rump, come and I join this party. The rhythm of the music make me feeling irate. Hey, now nah, doesn't matter where you coming from. Yes, to the rhythm of the feeling of the drama. Choose to do the things that made the people come together. Use the money maker that was given from your mama. Hey, now nah, select, I want to get the rubber dubber.
With your feet on the ground and reach for your brother with the words that you sound. And don't let mistakes be so monumental. And don't let your love be so confidential. And don't let your mind be so darn judgmental. And please let your heart be more influential. Be thankful for all that the spirit provides. And be thankful for all that you see without eyes. Give thanks to the music that keeps us alive. And give thanks to all DJs worldwide.
Don't tell the DJ got to turn it low. We keep on rocking to the early morning. I say, eh, hey, no, no.
Come on.
I say, eh, hey, no, no. Don't tell the people that they gotta go. I wanna keep them to the early morning. I say, eh, hey, no, no. I say, eh, hey, no, no.
Yeah,
you are now listening to the original.
Radioactive in its place.
Yeah. The music and the harmony, the family and friends. It seems like when you're dancing, man, the feeling never ends.
Uh-huh.
The bass of the bass, the voice of the drums, the fumble of the keys. My weapon is my tongue. If there's love in the rhythm, then the soul is gonna follow. We turning up the system, it'll go until tomorrow.
It's true.
If you need some money, I got something that you can borrow.
It's true.
We dance until the sun come up and cast shadows. Right now, the tune reflects. Light out, we soon connect. We ride, ride on lows and high. So hot that we sweat, so happy we cry. Wish bygones goodbye, thank God we's alive. With time on our side and his rhyme I provide. We smile or we slide, do I say goodbye? Nah, we keep it rocking like the sound of a lion.
Don't tell the DJ got to turn it low. We keep on rocking till the early morning. I say, eh, no, no. I say, eh, no, no. Don't tell the people that they got to go. I wanna keep them till the early morning. I say, eh, hey, no, no. I say, eh, hey, no, no. Yeah.
I listen to the drummer, mama, I listen to the bass. I listen to the rhythm, make you wanna feel your waist. I listen to the drummer, mama, I listen to the bass. I listen to the music, make you wanna feel your waist. I listen to the drummer, mama, I listen to the bass. I listen to the music, make you wanna feel your waist.
It's hot.
And if policemen come and try to break up the party tonight. Then I would stand firm with you, and we would brace ourselves for the fight. All night, alright, I say. Don't tell the DJ got to turn it low. We keep on rocking till the early morning. I say, eh, hey, no, no.
Come on.
I say, eh, hey, no, no. Don't tell the people that they gotta go. I wanna keep them till the early morning. I say, eh, hey, no, no. I say, eh, hey, no, no.
Grinding, they was doing that dance, but you know you see it on the rap stages all the time. They're shaking their arms. They was dropping it like it was hot. That's I think that's what they call it. They drop it like it's hot. And
you are listening to Latin Waves, a weekly syndicated program. For more information about our program, visit www.latinwavesmedia.com.